Chapter, How I Learned to Push Back. For 12 years, I was silent. What that looked like, I've already written. Skirts, massages, 12 days of silence, drinking to sleep with him when I didn't want to, 4 outbursts of anger in all those years. I won't repeat it. The body remembers. This is about how the silence began to end, how a fight used to work. He said something, and everything clenched inside. Not necessarily a scream, sometimes a contemptuous look, sometimes words that individually are normal, but in the context of 12 years hit the same place grandmother hit. Not the stomach, the dignity, and the autopilot switched on. Go silent, swallow, don't show, and then make up quickly. Reset the conflict to preserve contact, not because I thought I was wrong, because being cut off was scarier than any injustice. He lived with a woman who doesn't get offended and doesn't ask for help, care, and support. He thought so for 12 years, and I was stockpiling, like grandmother. Only I didn't explode. I drank, and one day stood on the balcony of the 17th floor. January 2026, the fight that changed everything. Vitya called at noon. Started with a complaint. I promised to come by 12 and would be 2 hours late due to circumstances I'd communicated. You promised and aren't keeping your word. Anxiety switched on immediately. Familiar, bodily. I'm unreliable. I don't keep my word. I'm wrong again. Then, without pause, he moved to an example. Told me about friends. They want a divorce because you can't rely on a person because of their ADHD. For him, it was someone else's story, an abstract example, not about us, but I was already inside the anxiety. The body was already on guard. And when right after you don't keep your word came, you can't rely on a person. The body connected the dots before the head. Not because I'm paranoid, because 12 years of criticism taught me to hear judgment where it hasn't been spoken yet. I interrupted. Said I hear this as a continuation, that first I was accused of unreliability, then the accusation was reinforced with a story where people divorce over it. You made up a dialogue in your head that didn't happen, he said. You got offended by words I didn't even say. He wanted one thing, for me to admit I'd misunderstood, that his example had nothing to do with me, that the problem was my interpretation, not how he started the conversation. I wrote him a letter. Detailed, explained. I didn't react to his intention. I reacted to the context, to the complaint that started the conversation, to the anxiety it triggered, to 12 years during which the body learned to expect judgment in every conversation. I didn't make up a dialogue. I lived the context he set, and it hurt. He didn't accept a single explanation. The formula remained. You distorted, you imagine, the problem is you. On the phone he added, you have an imaginary person in your head. It's possibly a consequence of your ADHD. I can't guess what's in your head. You have an imaginary person in your head. This is possibly a consequence of your ADHD. I can't guess what's going on inside you. That is, instead of I see my words hurt you, you have a perception defect. Instead of let's figure out what happened, you made it up. My pain was reclassified as my malfunction. We were arguing about what counts as reality. For him, reality was his intention and his words. For me, my reaction and my body. He said one thing, I heard another. And instead of trying to understand why I heard it that way, he insisted I heard it wrong. I showed my anger on the phone. He reacted by saying, you're mean, hung up, don't come. Before I would have given in, apologized for being offended, swallowed it. This time I wrote another letter, not hysterical, long, numbered, 10 patterns of our interaction, each with the mechanism, examples, and a description of what it does to me. Context is excluded. Only his words and his intention are recognized as reality. My explanations don't change his position, no matter how many times I explain. My labor is devalued. Where's the result? Nothing is changing. Prove it. My emotions are allowed only when convenient. Anger. You're mean. Phone hung up. I wrote not out of revenge. I wrote because for the first time in my life, I had language for what was happening. A CA gave me that language. And I could name the mechanism with precise words, not with screaming and not with silence. I lay down and fell asleep, calmly, without ruminating, without the usual horror that contact was severed and the world collapsed. The body responded with relief. Anger came out in words. And afterward, it got quieter, not louder. He called back, apologized, offered to make up. Before I would have rushed in, reset everything just so he'd talk to me again. This time I didn't rush, said but inside held one thing. Without acknowledging what happened, reconciliation is just another devaluation. We started talking. Slowly. Like two people who'd spent 12 years communicating in different languages. He started hearing. Not my arguments, but my pain. Started asking, did I upset you? He hadn't asked before, because he didn't know I got upset. Now he knew. March Friday, 2026. Called Vitya. Just wanted to be together. Suggested going to a restaurant or buying shrimp and cooking together. He answered, sorry, you're not in my focus of attention. You're calling short notice. Not, I'm busy, let's do tomorrow. But you're not in my focus of attention. Like a task that was postponed. I invited my husband to spend the evening together and was told I'm not a priority. The body heard the familiar. Before, this would have triggered the chain. Critic, of course, who needs you? Surrenderer, pointless, binge eater, open the fridge. It didn't trigger. Not because I suddenly became strong, but because that morning I'd breathed. 2 hours. The body was in a different state. Not survival mode, but slightly below. Slightly softer. And when the familiar chain tried to start, I managed to notice it before it picked up speed. I cooked myself dinner. Arranged it beautifully on a plate. As I'd never done before, because before, food was a task, not a pleasure. Promised myself I'd draw. Went to work on the book. A plate instead of a pit. A small choice. But mine. Sunday, 2 days later. Arseny's day. We were making a celebration for him, the three of us. At the table, I shared with Vitya a dream, something I'd been carrying for months and hadn't told anyone aloud. I said, I want my book to be recommended in every AA group, not from vanity, from a conviction that had grown over the past year. I had attended AA meetings. People there walked in for 30 years saying, I'm an alcoholic. 30 years of repenting. And it's true, they're alcoholics, but it's not the whole truth, because almost all of them grew up in the same houses as me. They treated alcohol, the symptom, and the root, childhood, remained untouched. No one asked why the person started drinking. No one taught loving parent. No one explained why meditation works at the level of the nervous system, not because God. For those who lost faith, for the thorough, for the analytical, AA had no tools. I wanted to provide them. He straightened an invisible crown on his head and said, crown not too tight? First, I couldn't respond. A lump, clenching. The same mechanism as with grandmother. When it hurts, go silent. But this time between it hurts and go silent, a gap appeared. A second, maybe two. Into that gap, I inserted words. You devalued the thing most precious to me. I've been carrying this book. I haven't left the house. And you, crown. He, what, you've never been offended before? Always offended, just held it in. He, I didn't know you were like that. Well, I am. And when I joke about myself, that's my right. Russians can joke about Russians, but Americans about Russians, no. When you joke about me at the moment, I trust you with the most precious thing. That's not a joke. That's devaluation. I said this calmly, looking him in the eyes, in the voice I hadn't had for 40 years. He didn't leave, didn't go silent, stood and listened, then, not right away, apologized. Before, there was nothing to apologize for. Not because he didn't offend, but because I didn't show that I was offended. He lived with a woman who endures, and I with a man to whom I couldn't show pain, because if I did, he'd leave. I was always afraid of that. Nobody left. On Friday, I handled myself. Didn't fall into the pit after "You're Not in My Focus," a plate, the book. On Sunday, I handled him. Said, "Well, I am," and didn't apologize for it. Between those 2 days, between the girl who for 40 years swallowed every devaluation and the woman who looked him in the eyes and named things by their names, a whole life, the program, the steps, the cat, the breathing, the dictaphone, notes on the fridge, and one skill I'm learning again at 41, to say that it hurts. Vitya is relearning, started asking, started noticing, started apologizing. Clumsily, like a person who was also never taught. I'm relearning to push back, not with a fist and not with silence, with words, quiet, precise. We are both without a model, both from houses where love looked like work and tenderness like weakness. He didn't read ACA books, didn't attend meetings, didn't meditate with Dispenza. He had no MAB, no language for what was happening to us. And still, he was changing, without tools, without a therapist, simply because I finally told the truth, and he heard it. For a person without a map, that's courage. I still live separately, want to return every day, but I need more time to get used to the fact that arseny doesn't scream, and Vitya is beginning to see me as a woman, not a function. This is not a happy ending. This is an honest beginning, or an honest ending. I don't know which yet. I said, I don't want a dialogue where everything is my fault. I didn't know whether it would work, didn't know whether he'd leave, didn't know whether this was the end of the marriage, but I said it, and didn't take it back. That is how it works. It doesn't look like a movie scene. It looks like a text message at 2 a.m. that you rewrite 17 times and then send anyway. Vitya read, called the next day, said, I hear you. Didn't say sorry, didn't say I was wrong, said, I hear you. For him, that was a lot. For me, it was enough. I'm relearning. Pushing back, not with a fist and not with silence, with words, with presence, with the willingness to say, this hurts me, and not run away from the fact that it hurts. We are both without a model, both from houses where love looked like war, both had to learn from scratch. How to fight and stay close, how to be angry and not destroy, how to say this hurts and not expect a blow in return. He didn't read ACA books, didn't go to meetings, didn't meditate. His way of changing was different, slower, quieter, less visible, but he changed. Not how I wanted, how he could. I still live separately, want to come back every day, but I need more time, more silence. More getting used to the fact that I can say this hurts and not be thrown out for it. This is not a happy ending. This is an honest beginning or an honest end. I don't know yet. I just know that for the first time in 12 years, both of us are trying, clumsily, with setbacks, with the old patterns still firing, but trying. Chapter Wild Kitten. On a ketamine session, Wild Kitten appeared, the same one from the basement, small, black, skinny, with protruding shoulder blades. Who wants contact and bites first? Who wants a belly rub and immediately attacks? Who waits to be picked up and is afraid of being dropped? On a session with Tanya, when I first fell into this child, the four-year-old who waits for mom and mom doesn't come, I cried and whispered, I'd settle for at least a cat. The loneliness was so deep you could drown in it. And the only thing I could say from that place, at least a living creature beside me, warm, who won't leave? Who doesn't care that I'm a bad mother, bad wife, bad granddaughter? A cat doesn't care. A cat is just there. And then Lapa appeared. Lapa the cat, also from a shelter, also abandoned, also grew up without a mother, like me. When I took her, she was wild. Hissed, bit, wouldn't let you touch her. Showed her belly and immediately attacked. Wanted contact and was the first to reject. Tested. Will you leave or stay? Will you hit or endure? A classic pattern for her testing attachment through aggression. The same one I'd been doing with Vitya for 12 years. The same one Arseny was doing with me. I moved out from Vitya and took Lapa with me. To the cell. To the small empty apartment where the book began. And started doing with her what I couldn't learn to do with people. Spoke in a kind voice. Didn't leave when she bit. Didn't scream when she scratched. Didn't reject when she hissed. Said, you're not alone. I'm here. You can come when you're ready. The same words I needed to say to myself. The same unconditional love I could give a cat, but not myself. Not yet. The kind voice didn't originate inside me. It wasn't there. Never. In my house, no one spoke that way. Grandmother spoke in commands. Not once did anyone say sunshine or, how are you? In a voice that makes you want not to run but to stay. The first time I heard this voice was by accident. Maxime was busy and his mother called. I picked up his phone. His mother, Nadezhda Vasilyevna, didn't know I'd answered and started speaking immediately without pause in that very voice. My sunshine, how are you? I froze, not from surprise, from recognizing something I'd never had, but that the body instantly identified as needed. As if inside me there was an outlet nothing had ever been plugged into. And suddenly, someone plugged something in, and the light turned on. Lapa, slowly, over months, like everything in my life, began to thaw, stopped biting so hard, started lying beside me, then on me, on my left shoulder, where the biggest tension lives, as if she knew, purred, warm, alive, and I lay there and felt, this is it. This is what it's like when someone is simply beside you, not because you're useful, not because you earned it, simply beside you. And I began transferring this experience inward. First, a kind voice with Lapa, then with Arseny, when he calmed down in the evening and became warm, tender, small. Then with myself, 1 millimeter at a time. First outward. You learn to love a living creature that bites. Then you see from outside what it looks like and not abandoning someone who tests. Then you apply it to yourself. From nothing, everything is born. This is how I created love from nothing. Like Munchausen pulling himself by the hair. Only instead of hair. A cat. And I'm a cat too. It's not Maxime, I said. But please continue. She laughed and continued in Zofuin, in the same voice, warm, soft, unhurried, as if she had all the time in the world for me. Though I wasn't her grandchild, wasn't her anything, just a stranger on the phone. The second time I heard this voice was several years later. My friend Lida described how her nanny used to talk to her as a child, gently, patiently, with that same sunshine. For Lida, it was simply a description of a good nanny. For me, a revelation. So that's what it sounds like. So that's what a child can hear. So that's what I never had. Years passed. I adopted the cat Lapa from a shelter. Wild, bitey, distrustful. I looked at her and recognized myself. An animal from a basement that hisses when you reach out. Not from evil, from fear. And I began transferring this experience inward, first to real Lapa, then to the inner kitten, the same one from the basement, frightened, hissing, biting, but alive. 2 shelter creatures, both without a mother, both with distrust instead of closeness, both learning to be held for the first time in their lives. The kind voice said on ketamine, the kitten shouldn't be scolded, she should be cherished. And every time the critics start screaming, you're defective, you're not coping, you'll never manage. I imagine the kitten, small, wild, in the basement, And I say, I'm here. You're not alone. This will pass. It works, not because I believe in imagery, but because the body responds to tone, to a kind voice, to warmth, even if it comes from yourself, even if at first you don't believe it. From a basement kitten to a panther, not right away. The one who learns to trust first learns to let herself be held, then to walk without flinching, then to lie in the sun, and then someday to become the one who holds others. And what's your image for the vulnerable part? Maybe it's a kitten, maybe a puppy, maybe a baby bird, something small, something alive, something that doesn't need instructions, just warmth. Chapter. Take what's yours. February 13th, 2026. I didn't attend my grandmother's funeral. When she died, I couldn't come. Couldn't handle it. And since then, I'd never said goodbye. Years passed and inside it lay, unspoken, unclosed. I lit two candles. One, hers. The other, mine. Tied them with string. Over time, when the connecting string burned through, her candle grew bigger. Mine, small. I started speaking. You are big, I am small. Forgive me and release me. Take back what's yours. I don't need what's not mine. Take back the belief that you can scream at children and they'll become better. Take back your victim, your martyr, your rescuer. Take back the shame for the body, for feelings, for weakness. Take back relaxing is not allowed and asking is shameful. I came here a very loving girl, simply boundlessly loving, and I'm taking that back. I give back what's yours. I don't need what's not mine. But her candle burned out first. A small stub lay at my feet. Now I am big, I said. You are small. And in that moment, instead of the anger I'd prepared, something else came, no anger at all, as if I'd opened a door behind which a fire should have been standing. And it was quiet, warm, peace, gratitude. Not for the beatings, not for the corner, not for the belt with the clasp, for taking me at 6 months, for not sending me to the orphanage, for being there when there was no one else. Harsh, terrifying, unbearable, but there. This was not forgiveness. Forgiveness came earlier, at the eighth step, and it was different. This was separation. A boundary between her life and mine, between what she put inside me and what I choose to carry forward. The next day came a gift. I loaded all my diaries, years of entries, voice notes, notebooks, into ChatGPT, and it analyzed my life, all the patterns, all the cycles. In a few hours, what therapy would have taken years, I sat reading and cried, healing tears. As if someone finally read my diary cover to cover and said, I see everything, and I'm not leaving. On the 13th, said goodbye to grandmother. On the 14th, saw myself, by irony of fate, on my mother's birthday. While you carry what's not yours, Warsai, you can't see your own. Your hands are full. Put it down, and you see. Chapter Mahashivratri. February 2026, Mahashivratri, an Indian holiday, the night of Shiva, the night when, by tradition, you can turn to something bigger than yourself. I don't believe in Shiva. Don't believe in God. I've written that already. But after Sadhguru, something shifted in my relationship to ritual, not to faith, to action. Ritual is not prayer. Ritual is when you do something with the body, and the body remembers. That night I didn't sleep, as is customary on Mahashivratri, staying awake until dawn. I sat in the dark, alone, in my cell, and did what I'd never done. Asked, not God, not Shiva, not a higher power, my lineage. I remembered from Hellinger's Constellations, but I'd never done this. I ask for help, I said aloud, in the empty apartment. Not salvation, help. Then I did what came on its own, not from a book, not from an instruction, from the body. I scooped out loneliness with my hands, with my palms, as if inside me was a well, and at the bottom, thick, black, heavy water. And I scooped it with my palms and poured it out, scooped and poured, again and again. The hands moved on their own, not beautifully, not ritually, but childlike, like a child scooping water from a puddle simply because she wants the puddle gone. It went on for a long time. I didn't count. By morning, the well hadn't emptied, but it got shallower. Shoulders dropped, for the first time in months, unclenched. First I separated from grandmother, then saw my patterns, then for the first time asked my lineage for help. 3 days, 3 actions. None was therapy, an insight, a book, a seminar. All three were ritual, bodily, clumsy, nocturnal. Done not because it helps, but because there's nothing else left to do. The lineage answered, not with a voice, not with a sign, with a sensation, as if behind my back. Not emptiness, but someone, many, silent, praying, standing. I didn't become a believer, didn't find God, but I stopped being alone. Chapter the First Arrival. April 21st, 2025. Adderalls are prescribed for ADHD, cannabis, prescribed for sleep, a dispensa meditation, 6 straight hours. I didn't plan this, didn't set an alarm for enlightenment at 2 p.m., just sat, closed my eyes, and didn't get up for 6 hours. Then, 2 more weeks, 12 to 18 hours a day. Got up at 5 a.m., sat on the mat, and until night. Not because I wanted to set a record, but because the body finally spoke, and I couldn't shut it up. 41 years it was silent. 41 years I forced it to be silent. With the corset, with control, with a pulled-in stomach, with clenched teeth. And now it opened its mouth, and waves poured out. The state was like being on mushrooms. But I was lucid and remembered everything. Waves moved through the body, from the pelvis upward, along the spine, to the crown. The snake, cracking sounds, like a chiropractor working in the room, only without the chiropractor. The body moved on its own, not from my command, but from its own logic, which I'd suppressed for 40 years. Muscles were restructuring, spasms releasing. Strange involuntary movements came out of the body. Like an animal stretching after lying in a cage for a very long time. The body was doing kundalini yoga, which I'd never practiced and didn't even know about at that point. And I saw beliefs, not as thoughts, as structures, as walls someone had built inside me long ago, and I'd been living behind them without knowing they were walls, not the world. I must be useful to exist. I see. Relaxing equals dangerous. I see. My body is not a source of truth, but a working tool. I see. Each belief flat like a brick. Each spasm. The point where the brick was cemented into the body. And the main thing, I saw how my corset was built from the inside. The outer muscles, strong. The ones you can see. Abs, shoulders, back. The ones that hold the facade. The ones that let you work 12 hours, carry a child. Drag suitcases through 3 countries, smile in an interview when inside you want to die. And the inner muscles, the core, the ones holding the spine, the ones that should be the foundation, weak, barely functioning, like a house with massive walls and a rotted foundation. And I saw when it started, the body showed right here, in infancy, right here the first chakra closed. When mother disappeared, when crying didn't work, when no one came, the body at 6 months made a decision, close, clench, survive. And since then, 41 years hadn't opened, and in those 6 hours, something began to open. Not immediately, not fully, like a door stuck from moisture that gives a millimeter, but gives. I called this given a new life, not because I was instantly healed, but because for the first time I saw the map. Before I walked by feel. Now I saw from above. The walls are the same, but I knew where the turns were. Then the effect ended. The body clenched back. The critic switched on. Control returned. But the map remained. And the body remembered. This is what it's like when you're open. This is what it's like when you breathe for real. This is what it's like when the spine isn't clamped but stands. The body tried, and now knew where to go, and I went. After the first arrival, I understood two things. First, insights in the head don't heal. The body heals. Through breathing, through movement, through what the head doesn't need to understand, the lungs just need to breathe. Second, the scheduled bladder surgery wouldn't help me. The problem isn't the bladder. The problem is that my pelvis has been clenched since age 3, since the day I wet myself on the carpet in front of everyone. And until the pelvis opens and I work through the shame, no surgery will change anything. I canceled the surgery, started working with the pelvis, with the sacrum, with the feet, building a map of the body bone by bone, muscle by muscle. The way I built a career, only now inward, not outward.